If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
So if you think about it, like your hormones, they ride the protein carrier to where they need to go. They come off of the carrier and now they're free so they can be active.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of the Healing Hormones Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Boyce, certified holistic health coach and Reiki practitioner. And I'm here with Dr. Brooke Kalanick on the podcast today, who is a licensed naturopathic doctor and women's hormone expert. She's also the co-author of Hangry, 5 Simple Steps to Balance Your Hormones and Restore Your Joy, and is the co-host of the popular podcast, The Sarah and Dr. Brooke Show. So I was really pumped to have Dr. Brooke on the podcast today because we are talking all about thyroid health. And the problem with the thyroid is there are so many women out there that are underdiagnosed. And this is because not all doctors run all the necessary labs that help women get to the bottom of what some of their thyroid issues are. And you'll learn a little bit more about why this is and why we can't really fault conventional medicine for this all of the time, because let's be real, insurance companies get in the mix and it can be a big old mess. But why going to a naturopathic doctor or a functional medicine doctor may be the next best option for you if you are struggling with a lot of thyroid symptoms. So just a little bit of an overview of some of the hypothyroid symptoms. If you're struggling with anxiety, brain fog, cold intolerance, digestive issues such as constipation, dry skin, fatigue, hair loss is a huge one, infertility is big, insomnia, low immunity, muscle weakness, menstrual disturbances, a lot of this can be tied back to hypothyroidism. And I really want women to be more aware of this because a lot of times when we're struggling with hormone imbalance in general, I mean, our thyroid is a hormone. And I think we kind of disconnect the two. So the one plays into the other. So if you're struggling with menstrual related symptoms, it's a good idea to get your thyroid checked and see if there's something going on there. It's like the hierarchy. Thyroid is up top and then it kind of trickles down after that. So this podcast is full of so much information, whether you currently have and been diagnosed with a thyroid condition, or you just feel like there's something going on underneath the surface, I highly recommend listening to this. And also grab a notebook because the beginning of it is so full of information, maybe even a little bit of information overload, but I promise you, we will link to all of the resources mentioned in the show notes. But I think it's just a good idea to get an overview of each of the thyroid labs and what they all mean. So I cannot wait for you guys to dig into this podcast. Just a reminder that if you're loving these episodes, or maybe you know someone that is struggling with their thyroid or hormone imbalance in general, please make sure to share these podcast episodes so they can reach more women. A great way to do that is by screenshotting the episode, sharing it on Instagram, and tagging me at Nourished with Nina. And I would absolutely love to see which episodes you are loving and which ones you are relating to. So again, screenshot this episode or any of your favorite Healing Hormones episodes and tag at Nourished with Nina on Instagram so I can see what you guys are loving. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and hop right into this episode with Dr. Brooke. So today I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Brooke, who was actually recommended to me by Dr. Jolene Brighton, that many of the listeners might know who she is. She's actually the author of Beyond the Pill, which is a fantastic resource. So when she sent me your name to have you on the podcast, I knew that you had to be fantastic because obviously Dr. Jolene Brighton is also fantastic. And you are such a perfect fit, of course, as a naturopathic doctor and somebody who specializes in women's health, but also thyroid health. And I haven't talked about that on the podcast before. So I'm so excited to dig into this topic with you today. And why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about who you are and your story so we can just hop right on in?
Yes, of course. Well, thanks for having me. So I'm a naturopathic and functional medicine physician. I went to Bastyr University in Seattle. And after sort of my own health journey with PCOS and feeling pretty unsatisfied with the options I was given as a young woman, and then as my hormones changed and I became more stressed as I was, you know, initially in pharmacy school and then in medical school, and having to just really find, you know, more answers in, you know, beyond the pill and beyond what they were telling me initially. And so I sort of came to do the work that I do now with women's hormones after my own journey, you know, of course. And I think that's a lot of us that work in this space have struggled with those things. And yeah, so I've been working, practicing, oh my gosh, like 13, 14 years now, 14 years, I think. Yeah, it's hard to believe it's been that long. Recently, this past, my book, Hangry, came out. I also have a podcast. So I work with women through lots of different ways now, one-on-one, and then through those other things to help them get their hormones and their happiness back on track.
That's amazing. And you know how common it is that a doctor has gone through their own health struggles, usually with something like chronic, of course, and they can't figure it out. And it's like traditional medicine isn't really solving it for them. And so it's like you go down your own path and then it turns into you helping others. It's such a common story that I hear over and over again.
Yeah. And I was deep in it with being, you know, a pharmacist. That was, you know, that model is really, you know, that it's all about the medications, right? And, you know, I was one of those women who just didn't feel great on the pill and the nutrition advice. So that was the only thing I had. So I'd kind of come on and off of it because I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, my nutrition advice at that time was not great. And, you know, I think this is a little bit different for every woman, but, you know, as a young woman in high school, when I was told that I had PCOS, it was just this tiniest blip of conversation. It's like, oh, you have this thing. And I was like, what does that mean? And they're like, well, you know, the best way to manage it is to put you on the pill and you might not be able to you probably won't be able to have a baby and you're probably going to get diabetes. And I was like, right. Okay. That's kind of a lot for, you know, and to just be, you know, not again, like, again, that model doesn't really allow the time or the, you know, even the education for doctors to really talk about nutrition. So I get it. It just wasn't the model for me personally. And, you know, ultimately I thought, you know, I can do more good stepping away from that and doing more of what helped me, which was working with my naturopathic doctor that just sort of changed my life.
Mm-hmm. I actually just started working with one as well. And she was on the podcast and we're friends. And, you know, I also am like very much into all of this, but sometimes you need someone that's just going to sit with you and look deeper. I mean, you know your body more than anybody, but I think having an outside person really dig in with you and like put the pieces and parts together, it's like putting the puzzle piece together, can be so helpful. And actually, this conversation is very timely for what I'm going through because I just decided, you know what, it's time for testing for me because I've done every possible thing I can think of with lifestyle, nutrition, stress reduction. And I just got my labs back from my family doctor. So I got labs done with them. A couple things were a little bit weird, but I was like, can you explain, like, why is it like this? And it feels like you don't really get much of an explanation, but I do understand that model isn't set up for that. And I didn't have anything glaring that was like, this needs attention right now. So it was just kind of like, we'll check on this again later. And I'm like, but wait, could this actually be some of the reasons why I'm having some of these struggles? So sent them off to my naturopathic doctor and, you know, we're meeting in February, so we'll go over them more. But it's a challenge when you get a diagnosis back or your labs are a little abnormal, but you don't really get much other than that.
Yeah. And again, it's kind of like going to your, you know, your mechanic who knows about your car and they're supposed to change the oil, right? But you're like, no, I wanted you to wash and wax my car. And it's like, they certainly could do that, but that's not what they do, right? So I think it's sometimes we want to remember, because I, you know, a lot of women reach out to me and they're like, I want to work with my doctor because they take my insurance and I just want to do that. So tell me what tests to order. So like you, I can give them a list of tests, but your tests are pretty much as good as whoever interprets them, right? A lot of women
exactly
get all this information and their doctors are like, you know, that looks fine to me. But they're like, well, I read that this is a little bit off, or this isn't an optimal range for that. Or they might even have not ordered everything. So like, you don't really need that one. Or we only order that if this one's abnormal. So you're kind
of, I want to talk more about that.
Yeah. And we definitely can't, because there's a lot with that. But you know, women get this information because they read online, or they like downloaded a list that I put out, or someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it right here.
Yeah. And they get that list, but then they're like, well, I have this information, but my doctor didn't do anything about it. And again, that's not really, you know, sort of what they do. So when you're working with someone who can, and this is important too, you know, you are more than your lab tests. So you've got your lab tests, your symptoms, your history, your goals. So they're really, you do need to sit down with someone, I think, and kind of, like yes. you said, put those pieces together. Because what we're looking for in conventional medicine, we call it healthcare. It's really disease care. I mean, your family practice mm-hmm. doctor has a couple of things. They need to make sure there's nothing that they need to refer you out for, and that you're sort of meeting like the basic criteria to be like average. And I think most right. of us don't want to be average. We want to feel a little better, because what's average? That's common, right? We'll talk to six of your girlfriends, and who feels bloated, who has PMS, who can't sleep, who's losing their hair, who's tired all the time.
Chronic fatigue.
Right. Pain. And so I yeah. think we think because it's our common experience that it's normal. And I think most women have gone to the doctor at one point or another and said, I'm really tired, I'm not doing great. They look at some tests and they're like, well, everything's fine. You know, you're tired because you're a mom, or you're tired because you're working. Or my favorite one is, well, every woman in my practice feels this way. And it really has become, you know, kind of brushed off a little bit.
When this was about 4.5 years ago, when I went to the doctor, and this really started this journey before I was really into holistic health and even becoming a coach myself, I was all normal. So then it was just an anxiety medication, because all of the things that I was struggling with was anxiety. I was like, I do have anxiety. Like raising my hand, I do. But I really know that that's not my normal. Like there has to be something that's causing it. And I later did find out it had a lot to do with my gut health and my hormones, and me needing to prioritize stress reduction and changing negative self. Like there was there's so much that goes into it. But rightfully so, I can't sit down and have a conversation with my doctor about that in one visit. And it's not their, I don't know if scope of practice is the right word, but not the right word. But it's not their job for you to like reschedule and keep having conversations with them about that. You yeah. need to really go off and seek somebody that is meant to do that with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just not really their expertise, right? I think most of them would admit yeah. that didn't have a lot of nutrition training, don't know the first thing about these vitamins you're taking. It's just not what I do, right? So
right.
again, it's... I don't like to fault them too much. They're doing what they do. It's just that, and that's not what a lot of women want. They want something else.
Exactly. And one more thing, just off of that, I feel like you just have to know what you're getting yourself into. So like when I went to my doctor last week, I knew I wanted to get these labs done. And I actually like wrote out like my naturopathic doctor. Is it naturopathic or naturopathic?
I think both are correct.
Okay. I say naturopathic.
I say naturopathic.
She too. Wants me to have these labs done. And I felt like it was a little bit of like, see, look, somebody else that is a doctor says that I should have these done. So I kind of came in with that. Then I'm just kind of used to knowing if I say I'm taking this supplement or this supplement, I might get that. I'm not quite sure why you would need to, or if that makes a difference. Or I have had it happen a couple times where I've been told to stop Googling. So I just am kind of careful about what I say and how I say it, because I understand who I'm talking to. And I do think it's valuable to go to your doctor and get tests. And also like insurance covers it. So go and do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, we just want to remember, like, the one thing you don't want is you don't want to feel shamed, right? If you're a doctor, I feel like the worst response is if someone's like, hey, I'm also working with this nutritionist or this naturopathic doctor or this functional medicine doctor, and we're doing X, Y, and Z. I think the best response is to say, well, that's not my area of expertise. I don't know anything about that. So I can't advise you on any of those things. So if you feel confident in this person, that's your decision. What I was hard is when they say, well, you're an idiot for spending your money on that. This is snake oil. This is whatever.
You feel guilty.
That's not a great doctor-patient relationship for you as far as your primary care doctor. I get that they don't, you know, it's not their thing. And I don't know that it's even really their job to be their thing. They're good at what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of us just need a little bit more, because like we were saying with lab tests, that again, it's really a disease care model. It's not a prevention model. They're not right. so much wanting to talk to you about like, you know, this test is like trending this way. What do we need to do to get in front of that? And that's really what more, you know, functional medicine and alternative naturopathic medicine tries to do. If you've got something going on, great. But we also want to deal with that. But we also want to look for, you know, especially like trends in thyroid, trends in autoimmunity, trends in blood sugar, because that goes back to us, right? As the patient, that is like, well, I can make some changes. I can do things differently in my diet, lifestyle, exercise, maybe take a supplement, maybe do something that can put me on a better path. And that's a lot of power. That comes back to us, right? As the patient. I'm saying us because I'm a patient too. But yeah, that's not really what goes on in our conventional model.
Yeah. So I just want to, for everybody listening, I just want to say, if you're going and getting your tests done and everything comes back normal, great. You're not at that point where there is some sort of disease that needs to be focused on. Like, that's good. But if you still don't feel well, take your results. And we can even talk more about, like, you have a fantastic document that I downloaded about like the labs, and you can compare and contrast, find a naturopathic doctor or functional medicine doctor, or even a coach that can help guide you to where you need to go. But trust yourself. If you don't feel well, the tests and the labs aren't the end all be all of what you can do to start to feel better.
Yeah. And there's a couple of really good points that you brought up. And one of them is like, let's just, since we're talking about thyroid, take Hashimoto's as an example. So let's say you convince your doctor to, or you somehow get your antibodies tested and they're positive. So we've got some markers for Hashimoto's, but when you look at your thyroid tests, they're okay in the sense that maybe you don't need a medication. And so if that was your conventional doctor, they're probably like, well, we can check them again, but we don't really do anything until you need Synthroid. Like that's the next step and you don't need that. So that you're kind of sent on your way as like these antibodies don't mean anything. But that's what we call, that's like the silent autoimmunity. The antibodies are there, but the tissue, the thyroid's not so destroyed that it can't make hormone. So what do we do to slow that down? How can we protect your thyroid? How can we support you? And that's a really important, that's a lot of power for you as a, you know, woman with these results to say, hey, there's some stuff I can do right now. And maybe I'll never need Synthroid, or maybe I can prolong it, or maybe. And the other thing with autoimmunity is, say we found Hashimoto's markers, but it's likely that there's other antibodies somewhere. And we know that you're in this autoimmune population. And we really want to be mindful of, you know, where else that might be. And then the other thing to think about is, let's say you got those thyroid tests, or you went in and said, I really want you to check my, you know, estrogen or progesterone, because I took this quiz online, or I read this book, and I have all the symptoms of, let's say, low estrogen and or low thyroid. But then they look at the numbers, and let's assume, especially for estrogen and progesterone, they were tested on the right day. But let's assume you got the right information and they look fine. So you go in and you're like, I've got these symptoms. But I've got a normal lab test. If we're just looking at hormone testing, one of the really important things to check if you're in that case is you know, look at inflammation. I always call inflammation the great hormone mess maker. It's going to affect all of your hormones. And it's what something to really remember, you know, to the women listening. If you've got all the symptoms, but your lab test looks normal, check for inflammation, because you might make the hormone, but you're not using it very well. And that's almost always inflammation.
So two questions there then. So one, in blood tests, it'll show like the total amount in your blood, but not what you're using. And so is that where like a Dutch test comes in handy, because you can test over a period of time? And then when you take a Dutch test, which is a urine test for testing your hormones, you're then able to see exactly like what estrogen your body is producing and like where it's going. And I think that that's kind of something important to note, because I'm actually getting my blood tested with my gyno like next week, but I'm just open to the fact that if my estrogen and progesterone levels are normal, that's not really that telling, to be honest.
Yeah. So the Dutch test and the serum test is a really important thing for women to understand. Like, you're getting totally different information. So if you look at a blood test that says progesterone, or a blood test that says, a thyroid hormone like thyroxine, or if you look at a blood test that says estrogen, and that's all it says, that's your total amount of hormone. That is not your free hormone. And it's free hormones that are active. So you would want to look on there. You can check some free hormones, like you can check free T4 and free T3 and free testosterone. So that's one delineation. You might make it, but the bioavailable amount is less. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing to think about. Again, with estrogen and progesterone, you got to make sure they check them on the right day. So day 3 or 5 for estrogen, typically day 3. Yeah. Day 21 for progesterone. You can glean some information from a day 21 estrogen as well. So female hormones need to be, if you're still cycling, those are going to matter for that.
Can you also follow the rule 7 days after you ovulate?
Yes.
For progesterone testing?
Yeah, so because day 19 honest, is kind I'm of wait- the general
Yeah,
rule.
Like the go-to, yeah, the day 21. Because I'm like waiting... I can't tell until I get a couple more temps in because I'm crazy and, you know, I track my temp every morning. If I like ovulated yesterday or today, but I'm supposed to get my blood test done on Wednesday. And I was like, oh, shoot. I'm like, what if I haven't ovulated in enough time? Does it really need to be exactly that 7 days or more to get a true progesterone reading?
So usually it's day 7 to 10, or sorry, not day 7 to 10. 7 to 10 days after you ovulate should be the peak of your progesterone. And that's what you're kind of looking for if you're doing a 1 day test, right? Yeah. Is like, this is when it's supposed to be the highest. Is it low? You know, mm-hmm. the other, because what can happen, especially with progesterone, is, you know, maybe you ovulated and it peaked, but it falls off really fast, or maybe it never peaked. So you know, looking at a 1 day test snapshot like that is telling us 1 day. And so we do, again, that's why we can't just go off the lab value. Like, maybe I talk to you as a patient and you're like, well, I also didn't have any signs of ovulation, so I don't know. Or I definitely had signs of ovulation on day 6 or something was really strange. And so, I didn't have signs of ovulation till day 12. We checked you on day 19. We might have got tested you too early. So you do want to take into account as much information as you have about your cycle. So this is one of the like somewhat challenging things about testing estrogen and progesterone. Now, looking at a Dutch test, you're looking at, again, so Dutch for the cortisol part of it, it's saliva and urine, cortisol and cortisol metabolites. And then for female hormones, you're looking at, again, like what's in your urine. So this is sort of like after it was made. So it's a little bit different. If you were taking samples, there's a couple of different ways to use a Dutch test. One, you can take a sample throughout the whole cycle. So that is giving you like, what does it look like, you know, from week 1 to week 2 to mm-hmm. week 3 to week 4. So you can see, are you getting the normal highs and lows that you should get? An additional piece of information that comes on the Dutch test is you get hormone metabolism. So you see like, of the estrogen you made, where does it go? Are you processing it properly? Are you metabolizing it through in a safe way? Same thing with testosterone. Like, you know, are you... As someone with PCOS, that's good information for me to have, right? Like, which pathway am I taking that down? And then I might know, you know, this is why I'm breaking out. So I need to focus on like the metabolism piece of it. So that's another something that we don't see on a blood test, but we see right. on a functional test like the Dutch test is what's the bigger story? Because you might have an estrogen dominance is a really, you know, this comes into play with this. So say you get your estrogen tested and it's fine, but you've got a really heavy period and you've got breast tenderness and your cycle's getting maybe a little bit shorter and you're getting maybe water retention and some of those estrogen dominance signs, that's probably because we've got these estrogen metabolism issues and not so much that right. you're overtly making or taking too much estrogen. So, you know, there's hormones, unfortunately, are just a little bit more complicated because it matters. Are you making it? Is it getting to where it needs to? Is a free hormone? Is it getting inside the cell without a lot of inflammation getting in the way and able to work? And then does it have the nutrients to take it, you know, to help it work within that cell? And then in the case of estrogens, a good, you know, are you able to clear it all the way out, or is it getting hung mm-hmm. up at the liver, at the gut? And so it's hard to just sometimes say like, well, that was my level of estrogen, end of story.
Which is why it's so beneficial if you're really struggling with symptoms and you feel like you've tried all the things. That's why it's great to go to somebody like a naturopathic doctor, a functional medicine doctor, who is going to help you put all of the pieces of the puzzle together. And again, I just want to reiterate that for anybody that's struggling is like, my tests are fine. Just that it might be a good thing to look into. Also, if you're listening to this, I actually did talk to Carrie Jones, Dr. Carrie Jones, back, I think, on episode 3. And she like discusses all of what we're talking about here with like estrogen metabolism and the liver. So head on back to that episode if you want to check out more details on that. Well, I do want to hop into the thyroid because we've already even touched a little bit on this idea of it's kind of hard to get everything you want tested sometimes. And I know this from personal experience because I'm trying to piece my clues together. If I ask for all of the things, like all of the functional thyroid lab, it's like, well, we don't need to do all of this. And so you can feel like it's a challenge to get what you want. Can you just talk a little bit about why there are so many tests for the thyroid? And maybe we can even go through each one. I know there's quite a bit, but just to understand what each of them mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of thyroid tests. And when you come in there with that, again, just remember the model you're walking into. When you come in for this list, like that's 9 tests or whatever, your doctor's going to say one of two things. I don't think you need all this, or I would be willing to order this for you, but I cannot justify this to your insurance. So remember, again, like where their head is at in terms of how they practice, because the way that the conventional model works is you're going to do the screening TSH. And as that signal, and I can walk through the cascade in a moment, but as that starts to rise, then that would trigger them to order follow-up testing from that, because their next step is, do I need to give this person Synthroid? Do I need to give them the thyroid medication, the synthetic T4? So that's where their head is at. And again, maybe if they're willing to do this because you guys have a great relationship and they're, you know, they're like, I just want to help you, they have to know, they know your insurance. And so your insurance may be, and this is the case for a lot of doctors, insurance is dictating how they practice. They can't stay on an insurance plan if they're constantly going off road. So keep that in mind too. So they may say, again, I would totally do this for you, but your insurance won't cover this. So just keep that in mind. There are definitely ways for you to get your own thyroid testing. Obviously, you're working with a functional medicine doctor, you might be paying out of pocket, but a lot of labs give some good cash discounts. If you're in a situation where you're like, I need to get this information because I need to see what's going on. So to kind of walk you through the different tests, we kind of just start at the top, you know, the hypothalamus and the pituitary. We don't typically check the communication between those two parts of your brain. We start at the pituitary, which makes the TSH, which the name implies exactly what it does, thyroid stimulating hormone. So it tells your thyroid, hey, body is struggling, you know, not enough thyroid hormone around here, please make some more. So then at the thyroid level, you can test your your T4 and your T3. So the majority of what your thyroid makes is T4, and then that has to be converted in various places, mostly in your liver, to active T3. So we can check T4 and T3. So typically it's TSH, maybe a total T4, and that's often where it starts. So
can I ask one question? Mm-hmm. In the test that I just got back, it was TH or TSH with reflux to T4. And I had no idea what that meant. And it was just one number. So I was like, what? Okay. What's my T4 though?
Exactly what that means is what I was talking about, is if the TSH was elevated, then it triggers the lab to run. So I could just order a TSH. So as the physician ordering the labs, I could just order a TSH, and it doesn't matter if it was, so, you know, doesn't matter if it's elevated. Let's say it was 20. It wouldn't trigger the next test because I didn't order it that way. But if the doctor marks on the lab form TSH with the reflux to T4, that means if the TSH is elevated or abnormal, run the T4. So you don't have to bring the patient in for another blood draw. So it's, you know, again, in the conventional
model. So would I have known if my TSH was elevated though? Because I don't even know what my normal TSH was. I just had that one result.
So that was your TSH then. And then if it was normal, they probably didn't run your T4.
Oh, does
that make sense?
Oh, that was my TSH. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's you know, really common, and a lot of doctors will do that. It's just if this is abnormal, then that triggers it to go ahead and run the T4. But there's a big question about what's normal for TSH. And I think all of us should get the T4 tested regardless, because TSH is not a perfect marker.
Yes. And it's also confusing because it took me a while to wrap my head around this. Was like, okay, my thyroid level is high, but that means my thyroid is like sluggish. So yeah, it's like the opposite, except my thyroid is actually errs on the lower, like the low side of the functional range. It's like 1.3 or like 1.8 or something.
Yeah. So you're talking
which
about,
is weird.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So, and then I can go through the rest of the test. So TSH, again, it's the signal. So it's going to rise if there's not enough hormone. So it is inverse that way. So if your thyroid hormone levels are low, then that signal is going to go up and up and up. It should.
It's trying really hard.
It's like yelling at your thyroid, like, please, please make some more hormone. We're struggling out here. Now, there can be the case where your thyroid hormones are low, but your TSH didn't go up. So that's a problem, right? So it's like, what's getting in the way of your pituitary sending a better signal? The other thing that can happen is, again, in the conventional model, we only worry about TSH if it's elevated. So some doctors consider elevated above like 4.5. Again, this is conventional model. Right. Some don't really consider it elevated till it's like up above 6. So that, you know, in the functional world, we're looking at it more when it's like above 3, above 3.5, like especially if it's trending that way consistently. And then we're also looking at the rest of the cascade, like looking at the other hormones too. So in your case with a lower TSH, so that's completely disregarded unless it's crazy low in the conventional medicine world. Yeah. So if it's really, really low, they're definitely going to check to see if your thyroid hormones are really high. And that can be hyperthyroidism, Graves' disease, or something else is going on. You're over-medicated. So typically, that is less common. I have none of
the symptoms of hyperthyroidism. I'm all, like, if I were to have any of them, it's like hypo. But also, which we'll talk about later, everything's so connected. So lots of the symptoms are correlated with other things. But
yeah. So that's the, you know, again, the TSH is not typically looked at unless it's really, really low. And we're worried that for some reason, your medication or possibly, you know, you're putting out, too much thyroid hormone. But when you're in that weird range like you, like it's 1 or 1.5 or 1.8.
Right.
In the functional model, we look at that as like, why is there such a low signal to this thyroid, especially if those other thyroid numbers are a little bit low? So if the other thyroid numbers are fine, then I don't worry so much about just the TSH being low. But if you're, you know, below 1.8 and your thyroid hormone levels, T4 and let's say just T4 at least, I'll talk about T3 in a second. If that is, you know, borderline low or low on the functional labs or even outright low, where we want to intervene, first of all, is why is there such a low signal, right? Like, why is your pituitary stimulating your thyroid? Maybe it could make it if it had a better signal. So when you look at the testing, we have the ability to test several steps. So the TSH, again, that's the signal. Is it high enough? Is it appropriate? Is it elevated? Is it too low? Checking your T4, we're checking what your thyroid is making. Checking your T3, we're checking, and these are total numbers.
What you're using.
That's
right?
What did you convert from your T4? Did you take it from T4 to T3? And then we a lot of times want to look at free hormone levels. Like, did you, now that you converted it.
That's where I get confused is with the free. Uh-huh. I'm like, I understand the concept of like what my T4 is. I understand that it converts to the usable form, which is T3. Mm-hmm. But then I get like this free and like revert. And then I start to get confused. So good.
So when you think of your hormones, and this is true of all your hormones, they don't float around your body for the most part free. They float around attached to a protein carrier. In this case, it's your, so you've got a little protein carrier. So when you've got any hormone, it is like sex hormone binding globulin is going to attach to your testosterone and your estrogen and your progesterone, and your thyroid binding globulin is going to be, not your thyroid globulin, it's your thyroid binding globulin. It's going to carry your thyroid hormone around, and same thing for cortisol. So your hormones don't float around free because they would they would be reacting with everything. So they need to, think of it like put your hormones in a cab. I live in New York City. Put them in a cab, take them to where they need to go, and then they get out of the cab and go into the restaurant. So if you think about it, like your hormones, they ride the protein carrier to where they need to go. They come off of the carrier and now they're free. And so so they can be active. And so again, you can have a problem at the level of TSH that can be elevated or not high enough. You can have a problem that your thyroid's not making enough T4. You could have an issue with you're not converting to T3. You could have an issue that those total numbers are fine, but your free hormones are too low. And that can happen, you know, with estrogen dominance. So we get an increase in these binding proteins, and maybe you've got the T3, but it's all of it's bound up. It's all in cabs and it can't get out.
You're not using it.
So you can't use it. And then after that, it has to attach, you know, get into the cell and work. And then there's some other things unique about the thyroid. And one of them is, you know, that you have to have really good gut health because you reconjugate some of your T3 with healthy gut bacteria. So that's a place that, again, maybe you got a good signal, maybe you made it, but you're not, you know, you're losing a large percentage of it because of unhealthy gut stuff. Conversion is really impacted by stress and inflammation and like deficiencies like selenium. So maybe you're making T4, but something's really slowing down that conversion. Maybe those things are okay, but you've got this estrogen dominance issue or too many binding proteins and you can't utilize, you know, those things. Or maybe you've got inflammation that you've...
Right.
So there, it really is that, then that's why we want... And the one other thing that happens with thyroid is there's something called reverse T3. So that's yet another test that we always like to see, because again, if you look at just a TSH and a T4 and they look okay, but you're like, my hair is falling out, I'm tired, my skin's dry, my reflexes are slow, I can't exercise, you know, maybe you're gaining weight. There's all this stuff that's going on. And we haven't talked about autoimmunity yet. But if I just take your TSH and T4, they might be okay. But maybe you've got something driving inflammation. And so you're getting the T4, but instead of going to active T3, it's going down this reverse T3 pathway. So that's sort of an inherent thing that our body has, because it doesn't ever want you to get too stimulated. So it normally kind of regulates like what's going to go to T3, what needs to go down this reverse pathway because we have too much. But unfortunately, our lifestyle in our modern world, we have stress and we have inflammation. And so it might be shooing too much of your T3 down this reverse pathway, not because you don't need it, but because it's upregulated by stress or inflammation. Chronic infections is something that really, really does that.
What does upregulated mean?
Going faster. So let's say that pathway is just running too fast, and it's not running fast because you have too much T3. It's running fast because it's being impacted by something else. So you took the time to make this thyroid hormone, you know, but now it's just getting lost down this pathway. So that's why we really like to look at that whole thing. Because if you, let's say you're not making T4, or let's say you're making T4, but you're not converting, that's a different treatment, right? Like maybe you're not making T4 because you don't have enough iodine and tyrosine in the raw materials. Maybe you're not converting because you've got too much stress, or maybe it's inflammation and you're losing it down that reverse pathway. So the treatment I would give you would be really different. And the treatment is not necessarily always the addition of a medication or a change in your dose. We can really intervene at all those different places more targeted when we see that full lab pattern. And then in addition to that, many women that are struggling with low thyroid are in that Hashimoto's camp, where the reason for their low thyroid is they're having an antibody attack on the thyroid. So that's why it's really important to run both of those antibodies. Oftentimes just TPO is run, but there are two. And they usually like to run both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like if a listener is tuning in and they're like, oh my gosh, how do I get all these? Because I want them now. Like I understand that there's so many different factors. Would they have to pay for it out of pocket and go to a naturopathic doctor? Or could they just maybe ask a naturopathic doctor to like beg their regular doctor to do it and maybe insurance would cover it? Like what do you do in that case where you're like, but I want the tests?
So again, this is what we're talking about in the beginning. Sometimes women just want the tests, but their regular doctor ran them and they're like, I don't even know, we don't do reverse T3. I don't even know what that means. Yeah. But yeah, it's a little high, you know, everything else looks fine. So you can always start with your regular doctor if you want your insurance to cover it. And there are naturopathic and functional doctors that do bill insurance. Many of them don't. And part of the reason is because to order something for insurance to pay for it, we have to have a good reason. And sometimes our reasons don't fit the insurance codes, right? Like my reason is I want to know why this woman's symptoms are happening. So I need to see the whole thing. But if her T4 is normal, she might still have problems with T3, or she might still have problems with reverse T3, or I might want to know if she has autoimmunity, but I can't really justify that within that model. So you can always start, and you can always look at a list. But again, if your doctor may or may not be able to help you with that information, you know, a thyroid panel you can get for relatively inexpensive, for, you know, somewhere between like $80 and $150. So there's places like Direct Labs. I use Principal Labs a lot. So there's other places as well. Canary Club. At the end of my book, we give some resources. There's a link in there to do Direct Labs. So there are places you can get it. And maybe you want to do that and at least know, like, I do see some stuff here because I've looked at a couple of these values online, and I do want to talk to somebody who can help me, you know, kind of work on the whole thing.
Yeah, like I'm a nerd about all of this. So I love to get, it's like a game almost. Like, okay, let's get it all and see what I can figure out. Like, not to be over into all of it, but it's nice to see the big picture and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't touched on the autoimmune piece of thyroid at all. And I know a lot of women that are struggling with Hashimoto's. And so there's the TPO, but there's also, can't remember what the other one is. Doesn't it have like a T and a G and a B in it or something?
Yeah, so it's thyroglobulin, but the test is usually called TAA, which doesn't sound like it should be, but that's so TPO. T-A-A. Yeah, and TPO of the two is more common, but sometimes people are negative for TPO and they're not for thyroglobulin. So I do really like to run both of those. And sometimes women have both of them. That's just two different parts of your thyroid that are being attacked. TPO is definitely the more common. So when you've got Hashimoto's, we have, and this is the way I explain this to my patients. Let's say you've got low thyroid and you've got Hashimoto's. So we have two different problems. The first one is we need to look at what do we need to do to support everything I just talked about. So everything I just talked about in the thyroid cascade, some of which is probably that you might not be making as much of it as you should, but you still got to convert it. So let's say you're somebody who's got low thyroid and Hashimoto's. So we know you've probably got some degree of inflammation, maybe not the healthiest gut. You've got Hashimoto's, but there's going to be multiple places in that whole cascade we just went through that we might be able to support you from start to finish, right? So you really want to look at the fact that we want to look at that whole thyroid cascade from brain down to the cell. How's everything going? So as a low thyroid person, that's what we want to look at. Like, where can we best intervene there? Taking a step back from the thyroid, we've also got an autoimmune disease. And I think because Hashimoto's is so common, and again, most of the primary care doctors are just like, well, yeah, you know, they're positive, but there's no extra thyroid treatment for that in that model. It's like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So sometimes they're just like, well, you know, maybe we can check you if you start having other symptoms, we can check you for other autoimmune diseases. But it doesn't change the treatment. It's still like, what's the best dose of the medications for the thyroid hormones?
Yeah.
But when we step back from that, now we've got an autoimmune disease. So, you know, there's usually, the stats are, if there's one antibody, there's typically at least three. So where else is this? And in addition to wanting to support your thyroid in the best way, what do I need to do to balance your immune system? How can we, you know, slow that train down, protect your thyroid, protect your other tissues. And so that's, you know, when you work with me, we really need to look at both of those things. Thyroid need is really important, but autoimmune is really important too. And what a lot of women experience is they're looking at their thyroid labs, maybe they're on medication, maybe they're not, and they look pretty good. They're like, when we look at that, you're technically not hypothyroid, but they're like, my hair's still falling out. I'm still tired. Yeah. I'm puffy. I'm having all the low thyroid symptoms. That's coming from that immune activation. So, you know, sometimes your thyroid labs look okay, but you've got all the symptoms in the book. We really need to step back at like, what's going on with inflammation? What's going on just by nature of you having Hashimoto's? So again, it's kind of brushed off as like not a big deal. But it is.
But your body's reacting in that way for a reason. And when it comes down to it, you've been talking a lot about like the gut and inflammation. It always comes back to the gut and inflammation. And like I mentioned before, like everything is connected. So when there's like gut and inflammation stuff going on, like your thyroid might be affected and then your other hormones become affected. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's that we need to go back and address why. We can't just let it go.
Right. Yeah. And so again, like a lot of women are like, well, my doctor ran those ones, but we didn't really ever talk about it. And my dose of Synthroid is whatever it is, which may or may not be the right medication. I mean, there's a whole other conversation about that. But yeah, we really want to look at the immune piece of it too, because when we think about the thyroid, you know, at least we have those medications, right? We've got multiple thyroid hormone replacement options. There's several medications that someone could take. But when it's other autoimmune diseases, you know, lupus and RA and, you know, there's MS, there's those have really harsh medications with them, right? So if your first antibody that's positive is thyroid antibodies, well, we don't want to brush that off as like not a big deal, right? Because like we don't want MS antibodies. We don't want lupus antibodies. So there's that time in there where you know that your immune system is a little bit off the rails and has been triggered, your genetic trigger has been pulled for diet, lifestyle, environmental, some sort of hormonal fluctuation, some issue pulled the trigger for you. And there's, you know, how can we intervene in that process to have Hashimoto's be like the worst of the concerns, right? Can we slow it down, and can we protect your other tissues?
Which is why I'm such an advocate of preventative medicine, because we can start to do things now before things get to that model where it's like some harsh interventions with other side effects.
Yeah. And not to say that like I wouldn't take those medications if I had MS, but I would also want to be doing all the other stuff. And I think there's sort of two sides of that, right? One is, well, I would never take those medications. I just want to do it with diet and exercise. And, you know, maybe that pans out, but there's so much power in all that prevention. And even if you do take the medications, if you needed them in the end, how much better are they going to work when we've handled, you know, all of those other things? And then there's also kind of this idea, and I just don't want any woman to feel like shamed or, you know, because sometimes there's this idea, I think, in wellness right now that medications are all bad. And my only goal
is... Which is another topic I wanted to talk about. So I'm really glad we're going there. Yes, keep going on that.
Well, you know, I have to ask myself, like, if I was diagnosed with MS and I had been gluten-free and I did all the stuff, and would there ever be a time I would consider more interventions? Well, of course there were. I'm the mother of two little girls, you know, and I know that that's going to work so much better because of all the other knowledge I have. Like, I know how to work with my immune system, and I know all the other pieces of that, clearing chronic infections and having a healthy gut and foods I need to avoid and managing my blood sugar and my stress and knowing my unique
Which
triggers.
Is so important when you have these medicines in you that can cause side effects like gut disturbance and other things. It's like when you're so right, when you're supporting your body in the other ways, it's going to help that medicine work more efficiently.
Right. And I think that, you know, we want to have it be a compliment if we need it. There's also lots of stories of women. I mean, Terry Walls is a great example, an MD who was in a wheelchair and turned her MS around with food. Essentially, right? Food and some supplements. So, you know, I think that, and a lot of lifestyle stuff. So there's room for both of it. And I think that there are a lot of those amazing success stories. I just don't want ever a woman to be like researching Hashimoto's or autoimmunity on the internet. And then they see that like, well, this person got off their meds. So, you know, gosh darn it, I need to be able to do that too. You know, I have this conversation every day in my practice with women. And that is that, you know, Nina's Hashimoto's might be meaner than my Hashimoto's. So, you know, you guys they're all so different, right? So I can't look at even all the women that just have Hashimoto's, let alone all the women that have all other forms of autoimmune stuff going on, and say, this is the protocol. You just go paleo, you just get off gluten, you just take turmeric and probiotics and you're good. Because it really doesn't work that way, because we're so unique when it comes to the immune system stuff. So, you know, just to anyone listening who's been researching this a lot and feels like, well, I still need my medication. What's wrong? What am I not wellnessing right enough about? Right?
Because wellnessing.
Yeah, it's become almost like a competition, right? Like how much can
how holistic can you be?
How holistic can I be? How much like, you know, homemade kombucha can I make? And that's going to fix it. And it does. It's super powerful. Nutritional medicine, lifestyle, those things are incredibly powerful and they're tools we want to use. But sometimes we want, you know, a little extra support too. And sometimes we don't. Some women do get off their medications and it's great. There's all flavors of this. So there's really no one right or wrong way to have any of these conditions. It's sort of like, how's it showing up for you and how can it be, you know, you can have the best life with as many tools as you need.
Yeah. And in my own life right now, it's like, I am so happy to be working with somebody because I'm doing a lot of the things, right? But there's so many different levels, like you said, like I know that my immune system is being activated for some reason. Even with just, I have a lot of signs and symptoms of endometriosis too. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, there's all these pieces and parts and like, what do I do? And just this past like few periods, I tried so many things not to take ibuprofen. I was like, oh, I'm going to do the ginger and magnesium and now I have cramp bark. And I was like, I just need to take it. Like, and that's something as simple as just ibuprofen. Yeah. But I even noticed myself feeling guilty like, oh no, I took something. It's like sometimes you need to, and you're in pain and you need to do something, or like you're fatigued and you have all these symptoms and while you're preparing your body, fine. Like, do what's going to make you feel better and help you get through and live the life that you need to live. But I actually have a question on, I feel like thyroid medication is, like Synthroid, can be really quickly given. Do you ever find that like, should you depending on where maybe your TSH levels are, do more lifestyle interventions first, or should you go on Synthroid and not ask any questions?
Well, that's a good question.
Or thyroxine, yeah. Are they the same thing?
They're the same thing. Synthroid is the standard of care. That is what your doctor will most likely start with. That is not always the place that, you know, functional doctors start with. So I don't like this idea that Synthroid's bad and it always has to be armor. It always has to be bioidentical. It's really, again, like all of this, just really individual to you. So what Synthroid is the T4. So if you came to me and you're like, okay, I had my TSH and my T4 checked. My doctor said I'm hypothyroid. They're going to give me Synthroid. Is that the best medication? Well, I'd say, first of all, how out of range are we talking here? Are you like just barely over, you know, the edge? How, maybe do we have a little bit of time to try some diet and lifestyle things? Cause you're feeling okay. Not great, but maybe, but let's say you're like, well, I'm a new mom and I have a toddler and a new baby and I can't get out of bed. You're not going to be getting great sleep, right? You're probably struggling to take care of yourself. Maybe, thyroid medicine is like totally the best answer. And we don't have a lot of time because, again, you're not going to sleep well till the newborn baby is sleeping well. So I think part of it is what's going on in your life. How badly are you feeling? And here's the other thing. Your body, every cell in your body has a receptor for thyroid hormone. If you cannot make it, you need to take it. So there's no shame in taking the medicine, but we do want to look at, again, like the whole picture. So are you in a place where diet and lifestyle, do we have a little bit of time, right? If you're coming to me and you're like, my memory is shot, I can't remember where I put my keys, I'm exhausted all the time, I'm going to say, let's get some thyroid hormone in there because your brain is really struggling and suffering. Maybe your period's gone. So, we want to really think about each individual woman. Now, how do we decide if Synthroid is the best? I do think it's important to look at the T3 so you can know so my T3 is really low. So maybe I'm not going to convert Synthroid that well. Maybe you start on Synthroid, you still want to check that T3 because maybe you feel a little bit better, your T4 comes up because that's what you're taking, but you can't convert it still. Right. So you really want to, again, you kind of have to know that whole picture to know what's the best medication, what's the, can I support my Synthroid working better, or is that just not a great medication for me? So you can take synthetic T4, you could take synthetic T3, which is Cytomel or leo-threonine. Or then there's this whole conversation about bioidenticals. So these are armor thyroid, nature thyroid. And then there's compounded where the doctor puts it together in the exact doses that you want. And there's sort of different schools of thought. For the most part, the functional medicine world likes the bioidentical because it is similar in structure to what your body makes. So there is, some good thinking behind that. But there's sometimes problems with fillers, or maybe women, and that could be with Synthroid or armor thyroid, or, women are like, well, I felt fine on this, but I took this different generic of the exact same medication and I felt really funky because there was just something slightly different in the binders and the fillers. The other thing is not every woman needs excess T3. So some women convert fine. I mean, they're not as common, but they take armor or something with added T3 and they feel jittery and anxious and terrible and sweaty. So they're probably somebody who's going to do better with a T4. So I do, we do think as a natural practitioner, the bioidentical idea, it sounds good. And for a lot of women, it's a game changer to get off Synthroid and try the bioidentical. Whether it's bioidentical or they needed that little bit of T3, that is oftentimes a complete game changer. But if I've got a woman who's like, there, she's doing great and feeling pretty good on Synthroid, I don't automatically change her just because it's synthetic.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question because this actually came in and it was that their thyroid levels were low and that they needed to be put on medication or high, whatever, however you say it. But they didn't really have any symptoms. Like they were actually taken aback. Like what? Mm-hmm. Why do I need this? I think the only symptom they had was thinning eyebrows. And that was like after the fact, like, oh, okay, well maybe the thinning eyebrows. So what if you are told you need medication for the rest of your life, but you don't really have any symptoms.
I would say if you are in that situation, or if you're just like, for whatever reason, just really opposed to starting a medication, I think there's something that happens when we're told you're going to need this medication for the rest of your life. It feels really heavy, and it feels really, you feel really defeated. You feel sick. You feel ill. You know, you feel like a chronic patient. So I think that that's important to acknowledge, that most of us don't want that news, right? So if you're someone who's feeling okay, I would say do the diet and lifestyle stuff. See if we can get you, see, again, look at all those tests. Where in the chain is it breaking down, and intervene there and see how we do. Maybe you just need to get your stress under control, or maybe there's something else going on, and there's lots of nutritional support for that. So I would say either if for right now, it does not feel good to you. Now, again, if you're my patient, we might be looking at labs. And even if you say, I don't want to take a medication, we might have a conversation about like, well, I think it's best and here's why, but it's always your choice, right? It is always your choice if you're going to take a supplement or a vitamin or eat lettuce or eat gluten or whatever it is. So yeah. Remember that the power is still yours. I think you want to just assess, like, in this situation, if you weren't feeling super bad and your cycle was normal, I would say we've got time. Let's, especially if you're young, like, we've got some time. Let's go in and do all the other stuff and try to get your thyroid to recover. Because if we can, it's a lot easier for me in that situation to help you with diet and lifestyle and some supplements, right. Get your thyroid
because
working.
You're already feeling okay.
Well, and your thyroid's still, you know, there. It hasn't been suppressed. Yeah. So that's a lot easier than if you come to me and you're like, I've taken Synthroid for 20 years and I want to come off of it. My honest answer is, I don't know what your thyroid would do because we have suppressed it for so long. Mm. Your body's amazing. Crazy stuff happens, but that's a lot harder than if someone is like, no, I haven't even ever started a medication and I really want to, I'm committed to like digging in and doing some stuff to see. And then you just check it in a few months, you know, or a few weeks and see what's going on.
Yeah. So when we're talking about the nutrition and lifestyle piece, two things like really come to my mind. It's like gluten is the enemy. And there's like a lot of back and forth about gluten, like from everywhere. It's like gluten's actually fine. There is no such thing as sensitivities. Wait, but there is a thing as sensitivities, and especially like in the gut, blah, 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 blah. Then with the thyroid. And then the other thing that comes to mind is people get really afraid of like cruciferous vegetables and broccoli and the thyroid. But then on the other hand, it's like, but these foods are so good for like supporting your liver and for hormone balance. So when it comes to the nutrition piece, are there no hard, what's the term, hard and fast rules when it comes to gluten and broccoli and all of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, there absolutely is something to gluten sensitivity that's different than celiac disease. And that is at this point, well-researched at Columbia and Harvard. So the wheel of medicine and nutrition turn very, very slow. So there will be a time when that is not a weird conversation to have. It still is. And people, it's so funny because if you go to a gathering of people that maybe aren't super like health and wellness minded, they're more like regular people that are just eating the standard, standard stuff. And you go to a get together and you say, oh, no, thanks. I just feel so crappy when I have sugar. I'm not going to have it. No one says anything to you. But if you say, oh yeah, I'm not eating gluten, they're like, oh, you're one of those. What you must follow, right. Dr. Crazy so-and-so. I'm not, right. It's funny. I'm not sure like just in the general population, why it's such an emotional trigger for people. I find that like sociologically very interesting, but.
There's also a lot of like registered dietitians and some books out where they, there's a book in my head right now that I'm referring to. I think it's called The Anti-Diet, which I'm all about intuitive eating, by the way. Mm-hmm. I actually follow so many of the principles, but there was something like, it's more about like in your head, if you have gluten sensitivity, it's more about the way you feel about gluten. I was like, but I don't think that's true from everything I've researched and learned.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's absolutely something to gluten sensitivity. And I think we have to just sometimes step away from the craziness and just say, when I eat this and my joints hurt, that's enough information. You don't need a double blind placebo controlled study. If you know, like just, we need to just like what I would say, be our best friend. Like, let's look at that. Now there are Cyrex Labs is someone who tests for like true gluten sensitivity. So I do have patients who are like, I'm not ready to make that kind of a diet and lifestyle change unless I see a test. So maybe we do the test. Other people are like, there's enough data to support the impact of gluten on leaky gut and autoimmunity that I'm willing to like make that shift, right? So there's that whole idea that it is a real thing. It does contribute to problems for some people. I also do not think gluten is terrible for every single person.
Right.
There are people that tolerate it okay. Now, if you're my patient and you've got Hashimoto's and we check you for, like, we do the Cyrex test and it comes back okay, I would say, you know, food sensitivities change. We're going to try to keep your gut really healthy. I would say I would not eat gluten as a staple in my diet if it were me. You don't have to panic about having it on occasion. You don't have to panic on it. Was there gluten in the kitchen? You know, so right. I think that
unless you're celiac.
Yeah. But I mean, like, if you're one of those people who, like, you don't have celiac, your sensitivity testing was negative, but you do have some autoimmune stuff, that would be my advice. So there's a whole realm of where, how serious someone needs to be. And a lot of it comes down to, like, how do you feel when you have it? You know, so my symptoms of gluten sensitivity is depression and fatigue, and I don't have anything go on digestively. That's what it is for me. It's just a lot of inflammation. So I don't eat it. There are other foods that don't work super great for me that I eat on occasion, like dairy. But the way I feel with gluten is, you know, and I've got a ton of autoimmune disease in my family. So there's a lot of that that I'm trying to be, you know, proactive about. When it comes to, like, intuitive eating, so this happens too, where we've got a woman who maybe has, like, a past eating disorder, and we're talking now about, like, well, we have sensitivity testing, or we've got all this autoimmune stuff. We want to look at gluten. We've got a lot of digestive stuff that we want to look at gluten. I mean, one of my first experiences with this, I was a newer practitioner, and I'm telling this person, I think we need to go off gluten. Therapist, absolutely not. That's going to trigger all your restriction.
Sorry, actually,
and
binging you froze.
Stuff, and that's,
you just froze. Shoot, I was trying to remember the last thing you said.
Do you want me to go back to the story about the patient?
Yeah. That's, like, right where I was like, what? What's the story?
Yeah. So one of my first experiences as a younger clinician was I'm seeing all this autoimmune stuff. We did Cyrex testing. We've got, you know, gluten reactivity in multiple different ways, you know, different types of, there's different forms of gluten. There's different, you know, ways that we can be reactive to gluten. She had not all of them, but, like, tons of them. So I'm saying, I think this is really going to be a powerful move for you and your health to go off of this. Her therapist is like, absolutely not. If you
restrict
an entire food group like this, it's going to trigger, like, your restriction and binging, things like that. And so her therapist is saying, no way. And I think a lot of other practitioners would say, well, just yes way. But my thought was like, well, I can't in good conscience tell you it's a good idea for you to keep eating this, but I don't want to trigger your past, like, some of those issues. So how do we do both? How do we continue to work on changing the perspective around restricting this certain food? Can we look at it as, like, this is something I'm doing to, you know, change my immune system? Can I focus on the things that I do get to eat? Is the, you know, because to me, the fallout that's going to come from continuing to eat a food that she was sensitive to is going to destroy her, you know, so many parts of her body. She had markers for lupus. We had markers for thyroid. There was a lot of stuff going on. So again, it's like, every time she's eating this, we were potentially destroying, like, blood vessels, right? So I think that if you're somebody that, so I absolutely do not think it's, like, in your head that you've just heard, and maybe some people have just heard gluten is bad and they're scared of it now. Like, that could be.
That's a fact. Yeah.
But I also think, like, you're a big girl. If you want to not eat it, like, don't eat it. I don't think you're at risk for a lot of nutrient deficiencies if we just take out gluten, right? But again, if you're somebody where this triggers some restriction and some of those things, like, maybe you don't completely come off gluten today, but we work towards that. It might be causing you a lot of grief. On the other hand, maybe it's not that big of a deal. In this case, it was. So it really was something we had to work through. And I've also had patients, you know, that are, like, one girl really comes to mind. Again, I was younger in practice, and we weren't doing any food sensitivity testing, but she came off gluten. She had such bad heartburn that, like, she couldn't even hardly go to the gym, because as soon as she would get down, like, to do a push-up, just reflux, like, so painful. And, you know, just really, really stuff going on with her skin and her digestion. And she came off gluten and grains in general. So she basically went on a, you know, simple paleo template. She lost 15 pounds that month. And so totally inflammation, right? She didn't lose 15 pounds of fat. And that was, like, a lot of inflammation. She had zero heartburn. She felt amazing. All her skin rashes went away. So to me, as a young doc, I'm like, that was great. That was so easy. All I did was put her on this, like, template. And it was great. She was like, I'd rather be sick than feel this restricted. She just wasn't she wasn't ready to like do that. So she went back to her acid medications and some of those things.
And that again is like your how do you want to live your life? Like what is easier for you mentally? What is easier for you physically? And I actually have to keep that in mind with the clients that I work with a lot, because if you are struggling with past restriction or binging or any of that, it's like we definitely have to manage what's going to be the best, I don't know, protocol, for lack of a better word, for what you need in your life today, right now, to keep each day the best for you. So
yeah, and sometimes we just have to do that healing. Like that might be the work. It's, you know, it's like, how can I take care of myself in that way and not have it feel bad? Because I always say, like, this siren going by, New York City. Two girls can go on the same nutrition plan. Let's not call it a diet. Two girls go gluten-free or paleo or whatever. And one of them, say they both physically feel better, but one of them, you know, one of them is like, this is great. I feel so empowered because when I changed my diet, my health changed, my body changed. I feel amazing. I am willing to live this on this diet plan or nutrition plan because I feel so good. Someone else could have the same results and feel utterly miserable about every second of it. And a lot of that comes down to, again, like what all's going on? How, you know, where is that restriction feeling coming from? What healing emotionally do we need to do to allow you to do what works for you, but not in a way that makes you feel miserable?
Which is why I love incorporating Reiki. I'm at Reiki 2 certified now. And I feel like there's this whole other element of like energy and our mental health and releasing past stories and all of the things that play. I mean, there's so many different factors into all of this. Just in like one podcast recording, we're talking about like food and mental health and all of this stuff. So I feel like we could have a whole nother hour to talk about just the things that we can do to start to help the thyroid. But I wanted to get all this information out into listeners' hands about if you are struggling, here's like testing that you can do. Here is when you're not happy with results, what you can do. If somebody wants more information on really the food and lifestyle piece, where can they find that? You know, where can they figure out what foods might be helpful or not helpful?
Yeah. So, well, one good resource is my book, because we talked all about all of the different hormones and what you need to do to diet, lifestyle, supplement wise, like what is it that you can do to kind of target these specific things? So if you need more testing, you know, you can get the lab guide, just search lab guide, or I can give you the link for the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes.
So that's like a good guide for like, okay, I've got some testing. How do I make sense of it? If you just want to, you know, look at like in general, what do I need to do for my thyroid? And I can answer the broccoli brassica question.
Oh, too. Yes. Yeah.
So the way I talk about it in, excuse me, in Hangry and in, you know, my practice is you've got this hormone hierarchy. So thyroid's kind of at the top of it, but so low thyroid, low cortisol, we really want to like heed advice for those hormones before we get into any of the other hormones. But when you take a step back from just the nuances we've been talking about with your thyroid, you got to have balanced blood sugar. You got to do whatever you need to do to lower inflammation. So that might be foods that don't work for you. That might be, you know, you're not getting enough rest. You're exercising in a way that's
not working.
That's
a lot of the work that I do with clients is focusing on those.
So blood sugar, stress, inflammation, and having a healthy gut. If you can do those things, you are going to impact your thyroid favorably, whether it's Hashimoto's or some other reason, and you're going to impact all of your hormones favorably. So just remembering, like, we never get, no matter what fancy supplement someone's trying to give you, you're never going to get out of stress management, getting enough rest, you know, not doing crazy stuff in the gym, you know, and like, we talk a lot in our book, and I deal with a lot of women who have like gotten themselves into hot water with their thyroid or their adrenals or their autoimmune stuff because of dieting and overexercising. I mean, many of us have been there. Women tend to, with exercise, just we never get it quite right. We're either not going at all, or we're just doing a bunch of crazy crap, right? Like, overdoing it. So, yeah, those are kind of the basic things for all of your hormones, and those are going to really impact, you know, your thyroid. So if you know you have Hashimoto's or autoimmunity, I would at least consider the gluten-free life, because that's, you know, in my opinion, I think we've got enough information to show that it's going to be helpful, because your gut is so important. And we've got different gluten. It's not genetically modified, it's hybridized, and it seems to be more of a problem for many people's immune systems. So I think that's the easiest way to think of it, is it's not the same as it used to be. And our new molecule is just, this hybridized molecule is kind of funky when it comes to our immune system. There is cross-reactivity between gluten and thyroid tissue. And that's something called molecular mimicry. Your immune system recognizes sequences of amino acids. And they're similar enough that if you've got some reactivity to gluten, it also recognizes that in your thyroid, and you're going to get some cross-reactivity if you've got, as far as your immune system goes. So I think the gluten-free one is a pretty good way to go as far as like the basic stuff. Now, anything else that causes you inflammation, so maybe that's also rice, or maybe it's dairy, or maybe it's some other thing, right? And oftentimes it's the stuff we eat every day.
Oils are huge, inflammatory oils.
Yeah, so like all of our processed seed oils, those. Looking at all of those things are going to be helpful to all of your hormones. And when it comes to, you know, those other things, like, again, what if it's chicken? You might have to kind of do some either elimination diet work, or food sensitivity testing can be a bit of a dicey subject.
Yeah, sometimes it tells you you're sensitive to like everything, and that really all you have to do is start to heal your gut and then you're fine.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, we really want to, and if you're sensitive to everything, we've got other conversations to have, right? Like we've got some tolerance issues to your environment. But I wanted to answer the broccoli brassica question real quick, because so that is a funny thing that's been around for a really long time. And this is the idea that the, you know, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, the brassica veggies are anti-thyroid, right? They're what happens is they can block your thyroid's ability to take iodine into the thyroid. And you need iodine and tyrosine to make thyroid hormone. So while this can happen, a couple things, you need a lot of them to do it. So you'd have to eat an awful lot of broccoli to have, you know, that happen. And cooking, like even like a light steamer saute deactivates that for the most part. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it's not true. It's just highly unlikely that that would ever happen. And again,
There's so many other benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and so I don't want a woman to not eat those things because they heard it was bad for their thyroid. Because again, it's a light cook of them is, you, now the goitrogens are, that's what they're called, goitrogens as compounds, they're going to be deactivated. So if the one time that I can see this, like actually in the real world becoming a problem, is if you ate a ton of soy, because that's another one. So if you had, you know, maybe you're a vegetarian and you have a soy milk latte and you have a soy protein shake and some tofu and maybe some tempeh other time during the day or some soy nuts. Like if you did all of that every day, you could probably do it. Now, the great thing is if you think that's happening, stop eating those foods. You should see your TSH go down, your T4 go up. So that's another thing is women are like, I'm avoiding all that. My labs didn't change. It's like, well, that's not what was wrong then. Again, you want to look at all those other things. And those are, we have food's a lot more complex than most of us realize. So maybe we have this group of food that changes iodine uptake into the thyroid, but we have other foods that actually enhance iodine uptake. So when we're eating a varied diet, we're also probably going to be okay. But again, like if you ate, you'd have to eat a ton of raw broccoli, a whole lot of it, or Brussels sprouts to create that problem. And again, that's not going to impact your Hashimoto's at all. Let's say you dial down broccoli, but we're still eating maybe gluten or some other food that's driving your autoimmunity. That's really where you want to look at your diet.
It's like we demonized just the broccoli and the cruciferous veggies, but there's so many other things that we should be focusing on instead.
Right. And I think most of it, not most, I mean, I wouldn't and you wouldn't because we do this, but there's a lot of people out there who's like, I would way rather give up broccoli than bread. Like, come on, like that's not even a contest. So.
Right. I love eating my broccoli.
I know, me too. Like Brussels sprouts I eat every day, but
I just had some yesterday. They were really good. I like baked them perfectly, put some apple cider vinegar. It was awesome. I know that like we are like a little bit over the hour, but I have one more question if that's okay.
Yep.
It's very much like the chicken or the egg for me. And I feel like this happens a lot where your thyroid is obviously one set of hormones, but then it's all related. It all affects each other. So if you're struggling with like, say, estrogen dominance issues or PMS or whatever, is it these hormones that are affecting the thyroid? Is it the thyroid that's affecting this? Or is it because they're all connected and have the same sort of communication system that they tend to all be affected? And I'm thinking specifically like women that or my mom's age, like into menopause or maybe in perimenopause, then they notice thyroid issues. So it's like, oh, it's because my other hormone is my, I haven't actually asked an official question, but do you get where I'm coming from with that? No, I get what you're saying.
And it is, it's super complicated. It's more like a web than a straight line for sure.
Yeah.
So, and like estrogen and thyroid is a good example of this. So if you've got estrogen dominance, it's going to, again, going to turn on those binding proteins, and you could end up low thyroid just because of the free hormone shift, right? You have too much estrogen or estrogen metabolites. They're driving up those binding proteins, and your thyroid hormone is all glued up and it can't work. So your thyroid issue is basically because of the estrogen issue. And this happens a lot with women on the pill, right? When we're taking, or even a hormone replacement, we're taking more estrogen. So we're going to, your body's going to have to make those proteins to take care of the estrogen. Thyroid gets a little bit caught in the crossfire there. Now, on the other side of that, let's say you don't have enough thyroid hormone. Like I said before, every cell in your body needs thyroid hormone. So that includes your ovaries, that includes your adrenal glands. So if you don't have enough thyroid hormone, your period's going to be weird because thyroid's going to impact your ovulation and the health of your ovary and the health of, your other, your gut lining, which is going to impact cortisol. And so it is really, really,
a web.
And like the gut health is a really interesting one because if you've got too much cortisol, it's going to be hard on your gut. If you don't have enough thyroid, you can't heal your gut. So that's another time where maybe we do need to take some medication because we can't fix your leaky gut because you have like no thyroid hormone. Thyroid is like the hormone of like regeneration. It helps the metabolism of every cell do its thing. So if that's a muscle cell, it's going to help it contract and produce energy. If it's an intestinal cell, it's going to, need to be like regenerated. Those replace themselves so quickly. So there's a lot of overlap in there. If you are overwhelmed, like I have a quiz on my website, let's say you take the quiz and or it's also in the Hangry book. And you're like, holy smokes, I have symptoms of low thyroid. I've got symptoms of cortisol. I've got symptoms of insulin resistance. And
all related.
Yeah. And I'm going through menopause. Mm-hmm. So I've got all this estrogen, progesterone imbalance. Where do I start? Especially because it's like, okay, I've got insulin resistance. So this website's saying you should do the keto diet and you should fast. And then I read over here that I can't do that.
I'm already stressed with you talking about it because that's like that almost is like the conventional model where it's like, I have this, so I'm going to address it with this thing. And then I'm going to go see this specialist for this. And this says this and this diet. And I see why women get so overwhelmed with it.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's conflicting, right? Because they're like, well, I'm supposed to do keto because that's good for, the menopausal weight gain or my insulin resistance or my PCOS. But I also, read it's going to like tank my thyroid and I'm also got low thyroid. So what do I do? And that's where that hormone hierarchy comes in. So you like take a breath and you just go through the hormone hierarchy is in my book. I have a blog on it. So you can find it. Perfect. But you want to address what you need to address for low thyroid or low cortisol first. So maybe that's, you focus on the inflammation. You might need to, especially like for lower cortisol, maybe you need to eat a little more frequently than fasting, right? You might need to eat 4 meals a day. And then as you kind of like heal and resolve those, you just go down the list and you can incorporate more things. So maybe you work on your thyroid and you get that in a good place. And then maybe the keto diet or fasting or any of those things might work really well for your PCOS. So if you go through them in that order, we tend to feel better.
Feel better every step of the way. Yeah. That is something I like to remind people too, is like you change something, like you, just by purely eating to balance your blood sugar, you will start to feel better.
For sure.
And then you can take the next step
Yeah. And you also won't like make matters worse. Like if someone is already low thyroid and they start fasting, their body's going to, do some adjustments and maybe you can't handle that. Right. Or maybe it's your adrenals. You've got low cortisol and you start fasting. Those mornings are going to be hard. You are not going to feel good and you're not going to like get used to it in a couple of days because you don't really have the cortisol to make that work.
Right.
Or let's say, I read high intensity interval training is the way to go for fat loss, but you don't have much thyroid hormone or you don't have much cortisol. You are not going to get those results. Plus you're going to drive your thyroid and cortisol further into the ground.
This is why there's no one size fits all people.
Exactly. So you really got to kind of like honor those more delicate hormones in order. And it is, a little bit overwhelming. I mean, that was the whole context of our book is like, how do we give a template and then help people, adjust, from there. But to your point about blood sugar, anything you can do to normalize blood sugar, stress, sleep. So insulin and cortisol, I always say they're not very sexy. They're not new. They're not, it's not exciting to talk about sleep and blood sugar and fiber and protein, but those two hormones so profoundly have a ripple effect across thyroid, estrogen, and progesterone. So if they're not in check, nothing else is going to work. And that's, whether that's, you know, maybe you read that you should train differently for different parts of your menstrual cycle. And it's not that that's not true, but if your cortisol is totally whacked and your blood sugar whacked, those subtle changes are, they're just not going to produce the same results. And by the same token, if you're a woman going through, you know, menopause and you're taking hormones and they're not working, it might be because we've got crazy amounts of stress and inflammation and your blood sugar is all over the place. And it doesn't mean you need a higher dose. It means we need to go back and fix those basics so that that, you know, hormone replacement can work for you.
Absolutely. Oh, this has been so wonderful. I could talk to you for so, so long. Really, I could just keep going with all of the questions. I can't wait to link your book in the show notes. I also know I mentioned this in the beginning, but you have a great like free download that we'll link to about labs and if you're getting tested. So that it's a fantastic resource. I'm actually going to use it for my own clients when I just look at what's going on with them and I can recommend great things for them. So thank you so much. Where else can our listeners find you, whether that be on Instagram or your website? We know the book and the free document will be in the show notes, but give us all the goods.
Yeah. So the book is called Hangry. So you can find that wherever books are sold. Sounds like you'll put the link in for that. My brand is Better by Dr. Brooke. So that's my website. That's my Instagram and my Facebook. So Better by Dr. Brooke on all of those places. And I'm not really on Twitter. I mean, I've got a Twitter, but I don't use it. And then also, I also have a podcast, The Sarah and Dr. Brooke Show, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome.
I hope that you guys learned a ton of information about thyroid health and now feel a little bit better about advocating for yourself when you go to the doctor, understanding the symptoms that follow along with hypothyroidism and even hyperthyroidism and what you can do to start feeling better again. Please make sure to download Dr. Brooke's functional lab testing document to learn everything you need to know and the levels that you can cross-reference when you go get your blood tested from the doctor. It is such a fantastic resource. And again, if you've been loving these episodes, make sure to take a screenshot, share it over on Instagram and tag at Nourished with Nina. I would love to repost all of you that are listening to the show and hopefully get more women listening to this information because it is so crucial and important for women to feel well. All right, that's all I have for you guys this week. Cannot wait to talk to you next week on a new episode of Healing Hormones.